This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Appreciate all of you as we roll into hour two, second hour of Outkick the Coverage. I'm doing the show from L.A. We got Jason Martin sitting in and hanging out with us a decent amount during this show as well. We are scheduled to be joined by Petros Papadakis in hour three. We'll dive into that USC scandal and more. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us for right now. In the meantime, a couple of things that I wanted to run into that are substantial stories that everybody has been talking about. First of all, I think this is a pretty wild story in general. The allegation that Ben Roethlisberger intentionally fumbled the football and all of the drama coming out of Pittsburgh. Guys, would you have ever believed that of all of the places in the NFL, if you looked at the Rooney family and everything they have represented and everything that entire, basically, institution, it is an institution, the Pittsburgh Steelers, would you have ever believed that they would end up being the center of drama that they have ended up being? And I think the question you have to ask is, and I think it's a tough question because Mike Tomlin has been insanely successful, what has happened in Pittsburgh that has created all of this drama? Because if you look at the rest of the NFL, there's not very much drama out there at all, right? You think about this. We've got the drama associated with Le'Veon Bell. I talked about this last week. I think Le'Veon Bell made a bad decision to sit out. I think that his overall decision-making in general for everything surrounding his contract was an utter disaster, right? I think that he got played. I think that he allowed his ego to get the better of him. But that situation doesn't arise in one day, right? This is a slowly festering issue between Le'Veon Bell and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Who usually fixes a festering issue? Either the owner or the head coach. Very rarely is it the GM. And I think the guy who sees him on a regular basis, sees Le'Veon Bell, has an interpersonal relationship with him, is Mike Tomlin. And the fact that Mike Tomlin allowed the Le'Veon Bell situation to accelerate to the point where he sits out an entire season rather than reporting is wild, okay? So I think that's number one on the drama scene. Number two on the drama scene, Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown is an elite-level wide receiving talent. If you are the Pittsburgh Steelers, you cannot allow your relationship with Antonio Brown to be so poisoned that ultimately you have to trade him and eat $21 million on your salary cap, and in exchange for Antonio Brown, you only get a third and a fifth round pick. That's a failure of the highest magnitude. To me, Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, the responsibility to a large extent lies with Mike Tomlin. And now we've got the story about Ben Roethlisberger potentially fumbling intentionally on the field, according to one of his former teammates. If that is going on as well, then the three biggest stars that you have had on your team over the past several years, Ben Roethlisberger, certainly Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown, have all created a cataclysmic failure, the likes of which we don't typically see in the NFL. Think about this for a minute. Who else is out there in the world of the NFL that provokes anywhere near this kind of reaction among other teammates? Right? Just think about this for right now. The NBA is filled with drama. There are guys constantly moving teams, demanding trades, everything else. It almost doesn't happen in the NFL. In fact, go into the universe of the NFL right now and find me a drama situation other than maybe the New England Patriots. And that seemed to be kind of a three-way triangle, right, between Brady, Kraft, and Belichick, and really probably a power struggle between Belichick and Brady over who deserved the most success for their tremendous dynasty. That's what that story seemed to be, and I think it got squashed, right, because you end up in a situation where there is a massive success with another Super Bowl, and there was hardly any drama coming out of New England this year. But you look at this situation in the NFL, and as successful as Mike Tomlin has been, and I think he's been insanely successful with the Steelers, don't you have to at some point move beyond looking at Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, and Ben Roethlisberger and ask yourself, what is going on in Pittsburgh that is so fecund that you could grow a triple sort of mess like this? What is going on that is allowing these kinds of issues to be so fertile? And I think ultimately you have to come back to the leadership, and I think ultimately you have to come back to Mike Tomlin. I think this is about Mike Tomlin's management of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, I'm not sure how you solve it. I'm not sure what you can do to make this situation better. But I got to tell you, it's hard to argue that this isn't resting entirely at Mike Tomlin's feet. Now, do I think Ben Roethlisberger intentionally fumbled the ball because he was mad about the play call that Todd Haley had put into the discussion there? No, I don't. But I'm not 100% sure. And there are a lot of quarterbacks out there that I would believe they would never do it if the accusation was made, right? If you came out to me right now and you said, hey, Tom Brady was so mad over the play call that Josh McDaniels made that down the stretch of a game he was trying to win, he intentionally fumbled. I think you can say a lot of things about Tom Brady. That on its face is a story I wouldn't believe. If you said the same thing back in the day about Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning was so mad about a play call that down the stretch of a game that they were winning and trying to run the clock out, he intentionally fumbled. I would never believe it. Now, there are some quarterbacks I believe it about. If you told me Cam Newton did that, I'd be like, I don't think he would do it, but I'll at least consider it, right? I would at least contemplate the idea that he might. If you told me that that Jameis Winston did it, I might believe it. Told me Russell Wilson, no, right? I can run through a huge list of NFL quarterbacks, and I feel like we have a good sense for who would be willing to even consider that. Not that I think they would do it, but that I would be like, oh, okay, I can kind of see that happening. I'm willing to consider that with Ben Roethlisberger. And do you know why I'm willing to consider that it might have happened? Because of the dysfunction that surrounds the Pittsburgh Steeler franchise right now. Wouldn't believe it about Brady. Wouldn't believe it about Manning. Wouldn't believe it about Russell Wilson. Again, I'm not sure that I believe it for Big Ben, but I'll consider it. I'll have a debate about it on the radio. I'll sit there and say, hey, you know what? Things are so messy with Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. I can see there being a power struggle in Pittsburgh. Ben Roethlisberger being unhappy with the play call. They were up 10, by the way, in that game. So even with the fumble, it wasn't necessarily going to cost him the game. I don't think he would do it. I'm like 85% no, but there's 15% of me that says, ah, you know what? I can believe that. It's like when Cam Newton didn't try and dive on the football in the Super Bowl. There are a lot of guys that I would have, if you'd told me beforehand, hey, there's going to be a loose ball on the field in the Super Bowl, and this guy, Cam Newton's not going to dive on it. Brady would try to dive on it, right? I don't know that I would believe that Ben Roethlisberger did this, but I'm at least willing to consider it. And there are a lot of other quarterbacks in the NFL that I wouldn't be willing to consider it. And why do I consider it with Ben Roethlisberger? Because of the dysfunction that comes from the Pittsburgh Steelers. So this is going to be an interesting test for the Steelers. Without Le'Veon Bell, without Antonio Brown, this is indisputably Ben Roethlisberger's team. Mike Tomlin has basically made his choice. Ben Roethlisberger, we believe in you. What kind of performance are the Steelers going to put out on the field? I don't know. But I'm fascinated to see, particularly because, and this is a fascinating part of this story too, the Browns are rising. In the past, the dysfunction with the Steelers, because the Bengals were up and down, the Ravens were up and down, and you knew the Browns were going to stink, they could get past this dysfunction and it didn't really catch up with them. Is that going to continue? Man, I don't know. I don't know what the overall outcome is going to end up being here. We'll talk about it, myself and Jason Martin, coming up in the next segment. Does he buy into the idea that Ben Roethlisberger would have intentionally done this? Or is this a totally made-up story and an allegation from a former teammate who had to recover the fumble, by the way, that there's no basis for this at all? Only the Pittsburgh Steelers right now is the dysfunction strong enough that their two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback, that we could even believe this might be true.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So I want to talk about brackets here, and I know we've talked a lot of brackets on this program and every program over the last couple of days, but I have a question for you, Clay. The Spun, again, put out its 64 bracket of most annoying people in sports media. What's worse, this bracket and you not being a number one seed, as you absolutely should be, or
yes,
ESPN botching the women's bracket reveal yesterday?
The botch, for people out there who don't know, ESPN accidentally put out the women's bracket 3 hours before it was supposed to be out.
Whoops.
Which is just so women's basketball. They say we never get respect, and ESPN had to issue this statement. In working with the NCAA to prepare for tonight's women's selection special, we received the bracket similar to years past. In the midst of our preparation, the bracket was mistakenly posted on ESPNU. We deeply regret the error and extend our apology to the NCAA and the women's basketball community. We will conduct a thorough review of our process to ensure it doesn't happen in the future. We will now broadcast the full bracket at 5 p.m. and then the regularly scheduled show on ESPN at 7. So this was supposed to be a major moment. Didn't this happen? I can't even remember now. Everything runs together. Didn't somebody get the men's bracket a few years ago and release it on Twitter?
Yeah, it was a social media deal. This was a totally different level of ineptitude. This was epic. They're sitting there, they're doing their bracket show that had run the night before for the men's, and then on the right side, there's the graphic of the women's bracket reveal. And so they go ahead and do the selection show a couple of hours early, which leads Oregon and other schools that had watch parties and all these things that they had put together logistically for the women's bracket reveal.
This is a big whiff. I mean, and my first thought is, like, I feel bad for inevitably the 25-year-old PA who was hard at work and just put the wrong file in, right? Like, somebody, and I understand people are out there and they're going to, I certainly have made fun of ESPN a lot over the years. It's funny, but having done television, I circle back around and I see how hard some of the young people that work on our show are and do. And you know this, you were an intern before. Like, a lot of times that grunt work is done, and I just immediately, like, almost cringe because I think about the 20, and I almost would guarantee you that it's a 25-year-old who's in charge of graphics that just grabbed the wrong NCAA tournament graphic and popped it up. And you can say that's a failure and everything else, and I would be intrigued to know the full story of how something like this happens, but I bet it's just human error. And oftentimes in stories like these, the human error comes down to a young person who's a low-level employee and is just, like, absolutely in an awful spot right now. So I feel bad for them. It's funny, but that's a big, it's a big whiff, but I don't think there's any malice intended here. I think it's just a screw up, like a screw up that might happen on this show all the time.
Yeah.
God knows how often we screw up and how often people might be screwing up going in as people are driving in this morning to go to their jobs, as often as it might happen at your job too.
The 64 most annoying people in sports media, the four number one seeds this year, Stephen A. Smith, Jim Rome, Skip Bayless, and our good pal Colin Cowherd. The number two seeds, Max Kellerman, Dick Vitale, Jason Whitlock, and Clay Travis. Clay, this is a situation where it seems clear to me that you are the Michigan State number two seed. You are the top number two seed. This is a disgrace because you are also in the same region as Jim Rome. And I think you are far more unlikable than Jim Rome, who you could beat up because we've seen him on Radio Row, and we know not a big guy, doesn't look particularly healthy these days.
Small man. Jim Rome is a small man. Like, this is where one of those things where, you know, you're both honored to be, because look, I mean, the reality is, if you are on this list,
you matter.
They basically, well, and also you got a big audience, right? Like, you don't end up on the most hated, annoying people in sports media audience unless you have a big audience. And it's funny, Cowherd, I think, right now, has the best national radio show in the country, right? If you think about making news, if you think about solo hosting. Like, he is, whether you like Colin or not, and obviously Colin's a friend of mine, he's immensely talented, right? The other guy on this list that's a top eight seed that I know really well, and we've had him on this show a lot, is Jason Whitlock, mm-hmm. right? And you don't have to agree with Jason Whitlock on everything either, but the amount of work that he puts in and the grind that he's done, writing over the years, radio, now television on Speak for Yourself, which I was on yesterday, and I may well be on again today. I haven't seen the full rundown because it's early in the morning as we do this show. But he puts in a lot of work. I think you can make fun of Stephen A., and certainly we have. You know, Tress Way, the latest thing when he's saying that he's one of the quarterbacks with the Redskins, and certainly there are a lot of whiffs. Like, Stephen A. is a really talented dude, and I've said that for a long time. So, you know, it's a little bit of a honor to be on this list. But here's what I would say. I am seated right now to go up against Darren Revelle in the second round of this tournament. Mm. Darren Revelle is woefully underseeded as a seven,
yeah,
right?
He is.
Like, and you think about people who are get a lot of hate on social media. The fact that Darren Revelle is a seven seed is just an insult to the bracket process to begin with.
Yeah, a couple of other guys that I look at, I'm like, how is this guy here? Keith Olbermann's a four seed. Keith Olbermann's number one with the bullet, right? Like, I mean, what are we talking about? Sarah Spain is a nine seed? Urban Meyer, I'm impressed for Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer is a 12 seed in the 64 most annoying people in sports media, and he's not really in sports media yet. Like, he hasn't done anything, and he's already in the bracket. That takes talent.
There's also some people on here where I'm like, how could you even dislike this person?
Yeah.
For instance, Adam Schefter. Who finds Adam Schefter annoying?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Yeah, I don't even know how you dislike Adam Schefter. He's just an incredible journalist, right? Like, he just breaks news. I don't really understand how you could, like, when you're in the opinion business, I understand how you can be disliked, right? So if you're an opinionist, I understand why you would be on this list. But I don't hear anybody ever say anything bad about Adam Schefter. You know, a lot of these other people in the opinion, I also feel like, look, Charles Barkley's a 14 seed.
Yeah.
I don't hear very much negative
about
Charles
Barkley. No, we all
love him. That's just a name on the bracket list. I also, Tony Romo is an eight seed. I don't hear anybody ever say anything bad about Tony Romo. Bill Walton as a four seed. I love Bill Walton. Did you hear him during the Pac-12?
Yeah, the Las Vegas thing?
Oh, it's unbelievable. Like, I'm flying to Vegas later today to go do the show Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from the MGM Grand. You should come watch Lock It In. But Bill Walton, during the Pac-12 tournament, said that he went and stood by the Statue of Liberty and gazed upon it and thought about everything that it meant. He went and looked at the Statue of Liberty in Las Vegas at New York, New York. He wasn't in the harbor in New York City, and he certainly didn't travel out on the boat to go stand by the feet of Lady Liberty. I mean, that dude is a national treasure.
Yeah, I mean, he loves marijuana. I mean, let's be real. I mean, my man was smoking peyote.
The thing that I can do is tell people exactly what I think. I'm not going to be the person who's like, hey, back in the Super Bowl, this is what we did to come back from a 14-point deficit, right? I don't have any experience in that. I'm not going to be the guy who comes on and says, hey, the play that should have been diagrammed out of that timeout in the NBA Finals was this one. That's not my thing, right? What I can do is be a fairly intelligent fan in the world of sports, use my law degree at times to talk intelligently about complicated issues in the world of sports. And I get it. Look, I'm in the opinion business. And it's funny, the tweet that I enjoy the most is when listeners are out there and they say, you know, when I first started listening to you, I hated you. But the more I listened, I don't know what happened, but I don't necessarily hate you anymore. And I like the Alonzo Mourning, you know, shaking his head. And then, like, he suddenly changes and starts nodding. Like, I love when people say, hey, I listen to your arguments. And when you sometimes start off, I'm like, what is that knucklehead saying? And then by the end, I'm starting to nod a little bit. Now, I don't expect anybody out there to agree with everything that I say, just like I wouldn't agree with everything that you say or that anybody else out there would say, because, you know, we're all unique in the way that we approach issues. But I do think that, you know, when I see this and I see that I'm a two seed, I'm like, well, you know, it's crazy to me that that we've created the space that we have in OutKick where our opinions are at least significant enough that whether you love or hate them, we're pretty high up there in the flow chart.
I agree. I mean, basically what Clay just said about the people that have gone from hate to love, Clay Travis grows on you. He grows on you like a fungus. By the way, by far the most underseeded guy as we go to break. Hour three coming up. Petros Papadakis will join us. OutKick the Coverage, Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We always, on Tuesday in this hour, are joined by my man, Petros Papadakis. Petros, the Lakers.
Good morning.
Good morning, first of all. Thank you for coming and hanging out with us. How excited are you, by the way, about the NCAA tournament? I know that oftentimes you don't like very much that everybody else likes. Are you excited at all about the NCAA tournament?
You know, it really just depends on the year and what the circumstances are. I like the NCAA tournament. I like Gonzaga. We have them on the West Coast. That's all we got. And an assorted amount of Pac-12 teams, most of which don't deserve to be there. But we have UC Irvine. You know, we have some good things in the tournament, and it really just depends on how it plays out and what happens during the tournament. You know, are we going to get a crying flute player or something like that? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you just don't know you're going to get.
I want to talk to you about...
It's like a present you have to unwrap, Clay.
Yeah, no, I know that. And hopefully we're going to have some good presents come Thursday and Friday. And honestly...
Don't you remember the crying flautist from Villanova?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that for sure. And Villanova's won two titles in the last 3 years, so she's ultimately ended up being a very happy person, probably well-adjusted in life. You went to USC. I believe your wife also went to USC, so you are legitimately a USC family.
My sister, my brother,
dad.
Tasso, my dad and mom, my mom's parents, my grandma on my dad's side, and assorted others.
So a lot of SC connections. When you story come out, and it's just, I mean, I don't follow it as closely as you do, but it's like every story about USC for the last 4 or 5 years has just been awful, right? How do you solve this? And it's not just, obviously, a lot of people focus on the athletic side of things, but there are a lot of just one body blow after another to the USC brand. What's the root cause of this, and how do you fix it?
When I was younger and playing at USC, the name of the president of the university was a guy named Stephen Sample. He passed away last couple years of Parkinson's, I think. But he's the guy that pulled the university up by its bootstraps, and it became a more legitimate, not that it was a bad school, but it just, you know, was a school you could get into back when I was younger. And it's a private school anyway, so they don't really have to answer for who they let in or don't let in ever about anything. But the point is, Stephen Sample was an academically based guy. He loved athletics too, but he was an honorable man. And the guy that took over was a man named Max Nikias from Cyprus, the island, not the city in Southern California. And he had this goal of $6 billion in fundraising, and a university that was once about money became grossly about money, and about money to the detriment of everything else. And I think it just set a tone, you know. Things at SC started to become for sale. You know, Jamie McCourt, Frank McCourt's wife, is on the board of trustees. You know, Willow Bay is the head of the communications department because her husband, Bob Iger, the head of Disney, I'm sure has made some very, very handsome donations. They became star effers, so to speak. And that's kind of what happened. And from the cheating scandal in the athletic department, which is nothing compared to what the campus gynecologist did, but it just seemed to kind of open the door, that culture that Max Nikias created as a university president, open the door for people to use the good name of the university to their own advantage and be I guess what you would call shady, to varying degrees, under the umbrella of USC. And in a lot of these situations, USC turned a blind eye or tried to pay people off, you know, like with the dean of the medical school or with the situation involving the gynecologist, which is also terrible. I mean, there's so much to unpack, Clay. I just don't know where to start.
And a lot of people who are listening to us right now, I mean, obviously in L.A. are familiar with this. But when, I mean, part of it is just kind of laughably absurd, right? When you have the Aunt Becky, for Lori Loughlin, who is buying her two daughters' ways into USC by pretending that they are going to be crew athletes, right? And when this story breaks, the daughter who is at SC is on the billionaire's yacht on spring break in the Bahamas, who is the board of trustees chair.
She was on Olivia Jade, who's a YouTube star and an influencer. She was on Rick Caruso, who is the chairman of the board of trustees' yacht for spring break, a $100 million yacht in the Caribbean.
I mean, that's just, I mean, it's satire, right? Like, if you were writing extreme, ridiculous satire of the rich and famous, it would be for a story like this to break. Aunt Becky from Full House, everybody knows Aunt Becky, is scheming to get her daughters in as fake crew athletes. And when this story breaks, for the daughter to be on the billionaire's yacht on spring break, I mean, it definitely fulfills all of, like, the derogatory thing people would have said when you were growing up is certainly that USC was the university of spoiled children, and it just fills in there, right? It just all rolls together.
Well, yeah, and I heard all that stuff when I was younger.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've all had the stereotypes for all kinds of different universities, and the closer you are to one, the more you hear. The truth about USC is there's, like, you know, 40,000 students there and some really great teachers and great people. But the upper echelon, the people that really get to use the name of the university, have ruined it with fundraising and been gross about it. How about the fact that this guy, Massimo, the Lori Loughlin's husband, he was on a plane with Pat Hayden, a fundraising trip to Augusta, and was told not to mention it to Pat Hayden because Hayden would ask for more money, you know, probably just for a donation or something to the university. But a lot of the people around the school that are that high up don't feel like the rules apply to them. Pat Hayden, the former AD at SC, was siphoning money off a charity that he was supposed to be running and giving his children like $100,000 a year salaries on some scholarship charity for poor kids. Now, that's why he had to step down. I mean, it just seems like USC kicking and screaming doesn't want to be dragged into the 21st century where your money is not going to solve all of your problems.
It is just an utterly unbelievable story. How does this get resolved going forward? I mean, they've had to fire several people, I think, in the athletic department.
I have no idea. I mean, we can sit here and go back and forth and talk about all the absurdity at USC in the last decade. And for the football program, it's really been a decade-long blood drain that you kind of see coming to fruition now in its absurdity and ridiculousness with a lot of the stuff that comes out of Clay Helton's mouth. But what do you do? I mean, you need a new university president. You need to have less than 50-plus members on your board who are mostly just, you know, really wealthy people who bought those spots. And you need a new athletic director, and you need a new direction for the university, which is, remember your past, you know, let's be a little bit less disgusting about everything. USC for years acted like the rules didn't apply to them. When the LA Times started pulling up a lot of the veins of these stories, USC ignored them and just tried to act like they would go away. And I think it's a good lesson in modern times, you know, that everybody, even these, you know, ancient institutions of higher learning that feel like they're above the law, nobody is above public scrutiny. And even if you're a private institution, if you act cool about it and act like you're too cool for school, it's going to be a long, slow demise. And that's what we've seen in the media in the last year. It feels like every week there's something embarrassing USC.
I never thought I would say that. Well, first of all, do you think Lynn Swann should be able to keep his job?
Do you?
No.
I mean, if he knew about it,
I don't even think it's criminal.
If he didn't know about it, then it's absurdly inept. I mean, this was one of the highest people up in the athletic. That's why USC's getting killed for this, and you know, Yale and Stanford and UCLA, some of the other schools are not. USC had the highest ranking person in their athletic department other than Lynn Swann, and maybe she was parallel with a guy named Steve Lopes. But that Donna Heinel, that's a huge, she is USC. I mean, she represents the whole place. So does that water polo coach. I mean, that's talking about one of the most decorated coaches in the history of the university. These aren't small fish that went down at SC. And you know how the feds are. Are they going to flip all these people? I mean, everybody's wondering how much bigger it will get. But I think you need a complete blood transfusion at USC. But I don't know where the doctor is to, I guess, perform that, because you know you have to be a willing patient, and I think USC still got a bunch of people that are not willing to give up power, and that's why you have the situation you've had. Tim Tessalone, the you know who he is, right? The head of communications for the athletic department and one of the ADs. He gave a pretty telling quote years ago in one of the Kiffin scandals or something. To Tom Friend, the sports writer. And the sports writer said, you know, a lot of your donors are upset. You know, they don't like Kiffin or whatever. And Tessalone's quote was, well, we're more worried about the $1 million donors than the $100 donors. And that was really his quote, you know, from the head of communications at USC. And that kind of sums up everything, right? That's kind of where they are right now and why they're in this trouble.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt at all. I mean, as you break it down, we're talking to Petros Papadakis at The Old P on Twitter, Petros and Money Show, AM 570 LA Sports, which I just mangled probably right there. But how
you
tough
just
is
got
it?
It.
I got it. I got it right.
You got it for the first time.
That's amazing.
Way
you go.
To go.
So how tough is it for you? And I think about this too, because when you have to rip a place that you went to, and I'm sure a lot of you loves SC, right? Like I will occasionally have to come on. I went to Vanderbilt. I met my wife there. It's a fabulous university. There are a lot of great people there. But every now and then they do something and you feel like it's a bad decision and you got to rip the university. And I think that's uniquely tough. That's got to be tough for you, right? Because you're an SC guy and you'd love for the university to be doing well. But at the same time, you got to be honest. When they screw up, you have an obligation to your audience to tell the truth, right?
Yeah, and some people might say that I'm way too hard on USC, but
yeah.
You know, a big part of my media career has been this 10-year kind of downslide. And I'm not just talking about wins and losses. I'm talking about stuff I've seen, you know, working at the university that I just never really liked. And maybe one day all the stories will be told, but for me, I take no pleasure in it. But I've been warning about, not to pat myself on the back, I do not have a beach house. But
you know
I've
what? Your house in L.A. probably costs more than my house and my beach house did combined, though.
Well, L.A. is quite expensive.
Yes.
Hell, I might be moving out soon. Who knows what I'll do for a living? But it is a very interesting kind of way that this has played out, because I was warning about this kind of stuff at SC for at least a decade, you know, even at the end of the Pete Carroll era in like 2009, where things got a little too fat and gross and just a little bit too drunk with success. And you saw the way that ended up with the sanctions that they got. So I've been warning about it for a long time. I never thought it would implode so spectacularly as it has right now. But again, I don't, you know, USC needs to want to do better. And there's too many rich people there, then there's too much money to be controlled that for these guys to give it up, I think.
We're talking to Petros Papadakis. All right, I'll go off the USC scandal story here for a moment, but I definitely wanted to ask you all about that. And I'll go into something that is turned into an unmitigated disaster. What happens with LeBron? I mean, we've gone from LeBron's going to win a championship for the Lakers, which was the hopes and dreams of Laker fans when this season started, to now, a lot of Laker fans out there are saying, you know what, I think that maybe they should trade LeBron James. And it's just amazing to see how this has all moved so rapidly. You got the block against the Knicks, the team basically collapsing. Now you're hoping that maybe they get into the lottery. Have you ever seen a story like this that began with such fanfare and excitement and has quickly turned into a horror film, basically?
Kind of like USC, right? I mean, all these stories sort of end up with despair and an apocalyptic end. But the LeBron thing is amazing, too. I mean, no one would ever think you'd want to trade the most recognizable athlete on the globe. But that sentiment has gained momentum. I don't know if they would do that or how, or if the NBA, as my radio partner has alleged, would even allow that, you know, because you don't just move LeBron around like a pawn. He's a huge deal. But at the same time, I think you hit the head on the nail. There is a tremendous amount of negativity surrounding this guy's Laker career. For as short as it's been, and maybe there's still promise in the next few years, depending on who they can add, the negativity and the word we like to use these days is optics, and just the whole vibe has been shameful. And there's a lot of blame to go around, but I think you're absolutely right, Clay. A lot of Laker fans, they don't like this guy. They think he's a bum, and they don't like his attitude, or they don't like their franchise being used as his vehicle at the end of his career. And I would say that number is growing, maybe half, maybe more than half. But there's a lot of people that just don't relate with what he's doing as a Laker.
Yeah, and you've hit on this earlier, that this is different than being in Cleveland with the Cavs and being in Miami with the Heat. Because let's be honest, the history of the Cavs is not very substantial. Certainly the Heat have almost no history at all. And so LeBron was bigger than the Cavs, and he was bigger than the Heat. But I think there are a lot of Laker fans out there listening to us right now saying LeBron is not bigger than the Lakers. And so the way that this story has played itself out is different in Los Angeles than it was in Miami or Cleveland.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, you do have to give Pat Riley credit, because he would not allow LeBron to fire the coach. He would not allow LeBron to make a lot of those different moves that he made in Cleveland that made it more of a dumpster fire. And eventually LeBron went back home. But, you know, Miami got their two championships and they were happy. So either you believe that Magic and Rob Pelinka built that team and they're inept, or LeBron built that team and he's inept. But either way, everybody's inept. And I think the number of free agents that want to come play with this guy is dwindling. And that's been clear for about 4 or 5 years.
He's Petros Papadakis. He is hanging out with us here on the morning show here, Outkick the Coverage, Tuesday edition. My man, I appreciate you getting up early for us, and hopefully we'll have some entertaining NCAA tournament options out there, even though the West Coast is not that well represented.
Well, you know, I could sit here and be like, well, Zion is so big and strong, and the athletes on the perimeter for North Carolina, you know, they fly around the court. I could do that. But really, it's just going to be about like a mascot getting shot in the balls with a t-shirt gun at the end of it. I mean, we don't know what's going to come out of it.
Outstanding stuff as always, my man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Clay.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Wild and awesome if you've never gotten the opportunity to do it. But I think this it's fascinating right now to look at the favorites in the world of college basketball, right? Because you have Duke, who is the biggest favorite that has existed in the NCAA tournament since Kentucky in 2014-15. And as good as Duke has been, what I would ask you to think about is this. What if North Carolina had beaten Duke in their semifinal game? What would the thought process be as we enter the NCAA tournament right now, as opposed to Zion following his own miss, getting the tip, narrowly winning that game, and then going and getting to beat Florida State in the championship? How would you be thinking about Duke? I think Duke is incredibly overvalued. So I don't think that the Blue Devils are going to win the national championship. I think if you're out there betting, there's much better areas to go and teams to find, all right? Who are those teams? Where's the value out there? I think there's good value on Kentucky right now. You can get Kentucky at 12-1. They're starting off their run down in Jacksonville. I think this Kentucky team is really good. I think if you look at their bracket, Kentucky is going to win their first round game against Abilene Christian or whoever it is. Then in their second round game, they're probably going to play Wofford. Let me tell you this right now. John Calipari ain't losing to Wofford, all right? That means Kentucky's into the Sweet 16. Is Kentucky going to lose to what would be a pretty good Houston team, right? I think that's the way the bracket sets up there. No way that Kentucky is going to lose to Houston, all right? That gets them into the Elite Eight. I think they would play against North Carolina, where lo and behold, they've already beaten North Carolina. When you look at Duke, it was basically 2-1 to win the championship. And you look at Kentucky at 12-1. I love the value on the Blue Devils at 12-1 coming out of that region, okay? I also think there's pretty good value, and some people are going to roll their eyes and be like, you're crazy, on Texas Tech in the West. In the West right now, you have Gonzaga, who I'm just not sold on, all right? They haven't had that many challenging games. They're coming off a bad loss to St. Mary's in the WCC Championship. You've got Michigan, who is, I think, a little bit of a wobbly team. I don't like Michigan there, all right? And then you've got a intriguing, I think, Texas Tech team sitting there as the three seed. I think the West is the most wide-open region in their bracket. I love Texas Tech, the value on the Red Raiders at 30-1 to potentially come out of that region and get into the Final Four. In the East region, I think Tennessee's set up. If they can get past Cincinnati in the second round, who they'd be projected to play, actually sets up pretty well. I'm not sold on Purdue, and I still think that while everybody seems to buy into UVA, I'm not sold on the fact that UVA is going to enter the NCAA tournament and suddenly be phenomenal after they lost in the first round as a one seed overall number one against a 16 seed. Just not necessarily sold on that. And in the other region of this country, I think Duke is overvalued. I like Michigan State as a little bit of a better value play coming out of the Duke region. I also think Virginia Tech, who beat Duke about a month ago, 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, I think there's some value on Virginia Tech there as well. So I know as all of you are filling out your brackets right now, there are a lot of people who dive in and say, oh, I'm going to go with the favorite. I'm going to pick Duke. I'd encourage you to look beyond Duke. I don't think there's much value on the Blue Devils at all right now. I think it's crazy that there's value on Kentucky. I think there's value on UNC. I like Michigan State in that region. I also like the value on Texas Tech and Tennessee. Those are teams that I think there is a decent value on as we enter into the NCAA tournament. All right, I appreciate all of you who have hung out with us here. Again, I'm doing the show live from L.A. Appreciate all the support. Our guests, thanks to Petros Papadakis for diving into that USC situation with me as well. We will be back tomorrow. I'll be doing the show live from Las Vegas, which we'll see how that goes. Viva Las Vegas, Wednesday edition of Outkick the Coverage from Las Vegas. Again, encourage you to go to the MGM Grand if you're going to be in Vegas for the NCAA tournament. Come by and see us taping. Lock it in. Appreciate all of you. Thanks for spending your time with me. I am Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.